Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and I'm joined by Dave Morris and we're going to do a joint episode tonight. How are you, Dave?
Hi Ken, I'm good, thank you.
It's traditional that we do some playful banter, so let's do playful banter. Okay, enough of that.
That was it, was it?
Oh, that was right, it, right. That was the playful banter. It's just hot and I have all the windows open, so if you're here.
Yeah, it's pretty warm here. Even for Edinburgh, it's pretty amazing.
Good. Okay. We want to tackle the most boring of topics, but to be honest, we're in the middle of the winter drought, or the summer drought, or winter drought if you're in Australia. Here in HPR, there are no shows, and I want to ask Dave a load of questions about a Perl script that he has written for me. And Dave, you've been so kind as to A, write the script, and B, come on to talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so parse 8601. First of all, let's find out what 8601 is. It's a ISO 8601 and it is a date format. And if you go to xkcd/1179, link in the show notes, you will find a humorous cartoon depicting that all dates should be 8601. And basically what it is year-2-digit month, 4-digit year-2-digit month-2-digit day of month, the letter T, hour-2-digit hour:2-digit minute:2-digit second, more or less. There are some abbreviations that you can do. And there will also be a link in the show notes to a to the specification for that and also for the Wikipedia page on that. So that's the first thing. Any comments on that, Dave? No?
No. The only comment I had was I've already started on some show notes, so the definition of the two definitions of the spec we're talking about tonight are in that
Cool.
Yeah.
But that is the date format which everybody should be using. And ironically enough, as I look in your Perl script, Dave Morris, pointing at you, you are not using ISO 8601 date format.
No.
I wish to submit a patch.
Okay, I'll give you my excuses now then. The way that I write Perl scripts, I use a Vim plugin, which is whose name I've forgotten just for the moment. It's called some Perl thingy. And it has the capability of pointing at a field and going click or typing in a bunch of funny characters. And it will then update the date. So I keep the created date and the revision date updated by that means. And it does a more human legible but a less standard format in there. So maybe I should nag the creator of this thing and say, how about we have a different date form? Actually, come to think of it, there may well be a way of fiddling that underneath configuration file. So not looked at that yet.
Yes,
but yes,
the
point
date
taken.
Format, and this highlights exactly the issue that I have with any other date format other than 8601, is that we have 04/07/2013 is when it was created on.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and it's an
somebody
ambiguous
from the
date.
States looking at that
yes.
will go, okay, that's the 7th of...
7th.
March. April.
No, April, yes.
Yeah. So if you put it the other way around, for a start, everybody knows, oh, there's a 4-digit
yes.
year, therefore it's ISO 8601.
Oh, I do understand the... whenever you're doing anything machine-readable, then definitely 8601 is the way to go.
Also,
there's maybe a little bit of debate when it comes to human-readable, but...
No. If human-readable, I dismiss that argument. If people start using that format, it's completely... within a week or two, you're completely converted. It's, and it all makes sense. It's the year, month, day. Okay. As I read it, I have the date on the bottom right-hand corner of my PC, and that's the format there. It gets very, very easy to read it. Plus, it also means if you're saving files or something, you can sort them by date without having to,
rely
on the metadata of the file.
Yes. I have certainly done this for many years. Yep. Okay.
But that is besides the point. There is the format for the date, but there's such a thing as a duration, and that is also covered by the same specification. And that duration follows slightly different standard. It kind of works in the same way, but it is missing. It starts first of all with the letter P, and I believe it originally started meaning period, but now it's just a start identifier, followed by zero or more years, zero or more months, zero or more weeks, zero or more days, followed by the T for time designator if it's there, followed by zero more hours, zero more minutes, zero more seconds. Anything you want to say about that?
The weeks thing I'm not sure about. Where did you get that from?
That came from the from the Wikipedia page, actually.
Yeah. I saw it in the Wikipedia reference, but not in what I took to be the original specification of the thing. So whether the original has been embellished a bit to include weeks, I don't know. Do you know anything more about it?
I think what has happened here is that the ISO standard organization, being an international standard body, charge hardcore money for their specs. So therefore, these specs, in order to use them, you need to purchase them. And they're very, very, very expensive. Wow. And what they do, smart as they are, is if you buy one, then they will reference four others in it. And then the one that you're actually looking for might be four deep down. And we're not talking cheap. You know, there's 600 or 700 euros for for one of these specs. And we were looking at was the W3C consortium's version, which is publicly available. And I think for all intents and purposes, that's the closest thing we need to base it on, because I think they also cover the XML specification as well. So everything goes back to that, and then they go back to the ISO 8601.
It didn't, but that particular one didn't seem to include a weeks spec that I could see anyway.
Personally, I don't like the idea of weeks anyway, because I don't like the idea of months either, to be brutally honest with you.
Well, a week is a more clear definition than a month.
It would be, yes. A week would be more clear, I suppose, yeah.
There's a lot of wobbliness in this whole business of date specs. I mean, duration specs, because, you know, this is a month long, but which month?
And, exactly.
This is a year long, but which year? You know, is it a leap year or not? And it's all rather messy.
So what I've seen myself in an application for this, which has been, you know, in my experience, people tend to use just multiples of days. So if they want to say a year, they'll say 365 days, many hours, so many minutes, so many seconds, to avoid that disambiguity. Is that a word?
Ambiguity, I would imagine you mean.
To avoid that ambiguity. Would turn that upside down. To avoid the ambiguity of that, they explicitly do it. However, if you're writing specifications yourself at home and want to make sure that people are using this format, duration format, you should also highlight in your documentation that you are forbidding the use of month and possibly years either, possibly weeks as well.
Okay. Yeah, days is, I think... I've put some comments in the script that I've written to that general effect already. So just for future readers to
ponder.
If anybody's interested enough to read it. Good.
Anyway, so you have a Perl script. Tell us about Perl, what it is.
Well, Perl's a wonderful language, the origin of which I can't really remember, I'm afraid. But goes back quite a long way, and it is a language which was brought together from the ideas that already existed in the Unix operating system. So the author looked at things like grep and awk and sed and thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had a language that incorporated them all? And he created Perl, and there it was. So it's a strange amalgam. Larry Wall, yes, indeed. Who is a linguist, which is you know, an interesting position to start from. It has its, I guess you'd call them strong advantages, and others would call them idiosyncrasies, which have come about as a consequence of the origins from a linguist.
But it does explain a lot, actually. And it kind of helps you to remember it as you're learning, if you know that to start off. If you don't, it's you're beating your head against the wall. Well,
it's, yes. Anyway, that's Pearl in a very small nutshell.
Which is actually a book by...
that's Pearl, probably Randall. Randall Schwartz, Schwartz has, yes, got his finger in there somewhere, I'm not sure. Yeah. But yes. So it's the fact that... I would like to think that the fact that the O'Reilly books use animal symbols on the front, animal logos on the front, and the Pearl one tends to be a camel, and a camel is traditionally an animal that was created by committee, gives you some indication of what you're in for when it comes to Pearl. However, Pearl is a wonderful language and it's very, very powerful. Many people say, oh, I hate Pearl because every Pearl script I ever look at is a mess and I can't make head or tail of it. But the same thing could apply to any language.
I've seen many.
I've seen some pretty dire C programs and some appalling Pascal programs and et cetera, et cetera. Python, perhaps, they're more
not so
constrained.
Much, no. They're required. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, it's, my point really is that it's the writer who you have to complain to rather than the language.
Yes, and this is actually why we're having this discussion. But before we go further, I actually want to recommend if you're lobbed with some Perl scripts or have to do some Perl work yourself and want to get off the ground pretty quick, I found Sam's Teach Yourself Perl in 24 Hours, third edition, by Clinton Pierce to be quite a very easy read. Just covers the basics and doesn't go too deep or try to be too smarmy and smart as certain other books do. It's very down to earth and nice examples, but that's a by the by.
Good. But another hint perhaps is if you are able to and you're allowed to, feeding the script through the Pearl Tidy utility is a damn good thing to do because it takes it and formats it in a standardized style and makes it look a lot prettier and more readable. That's what I always do with mine.
Okay, that's I fear greatly what would happen in my scripts. What was that?
We have somebody just joined the channel.
I'm just going to mute them if that's okay. Sorry, plumber user, but we're recording a show at the moment.
Go on. You were going to deny my recommendation of using Pearl Tidy, perhaps?
No, not at all. I was just very worried about what would happen if I ran through some of my scripts. You see, I labored under the... under the illusion that my Pearl foo was improving. But then I asked Dave here for problem with some regular expressions to do this ISO 8601 duration thing. And then I realized how far from that goal I have drifted. So I want to walk through your script. And don't worry, I know everybody, this is relatively short script, it won't be that painful. And hey, if it is that painful, the reason you're listening to this show is because you didn't sit down in front of a mic and record the show and send it in. Yeah? So don't complain to us. Thank you very much. Anyway, Dave, your script starts with #!/user/bin/Pearl. I think we get that. Bash scripts. The first line defines the bash script. Now, then what you have is 28 lines of comments, which are brilliant. Uh-huh. The file, what it's called, the usage, what it's called, the description, options, some notes about it, author and copyright and stuff. So tell me, do you start off with that first, or do you, where does that come? Is that the last thing you do or the first thing you do?
First thing. Because I use this Pearl plugin, which is, his name I've completely forgotten, I'm afraid. Pearl Support, it's called. I did talk about on my episode about Vim plugins. It's a simple matter to simply open a window and say bung the standard template in there and for a program, and you get a script template like this, comment template like this, I mean, and other things if you wish, because you could modify the template to your own desires. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. And you. Yeah, but you start off then beforehand, knowing what you're going to code, and not just sit down and try and hack something like I do.
Well, okay. The real answer is at the point before I actually sit down with an editor, I would probably try writing some stuff on the command line, because Perl can be invoked from the command line. If you type at the command line Perl space minus e and then open quote, single quote preferably, the stuff you type between the single quotes is a little Perl script. So if you're playing around with experimenting with regular expressions, which is one of the nastiest things to prepare, it's often a brilliant thing to do just to try out your ideas through that means. Yeah, you with me?
I get you. I completely understand.
So for example, I did, when I was designing the regular expression here, I did that using the Perl minus e function, and then simply put an example of a duration time spec into a variable and threw it at the regular expression to see what happened. Okay. So it was a fair bit of, you know, 10-15 minutes of playing around like that before I actually resorted to editing something.
Okay, so then everything else is just a wrapper around the regular expression that you've written.
Effectively, yes, yeah, okay. Yes. I just heed the regular expression into the file and then started structuring some Perl around it and played with it from there.
Okay, now we're as far as line, line 30, which is use 50101. Does that mean you must use that version, Perl 5010?
That means that one or greater.
Okay.
Yeah, that one or higher, yeah.
So then the use strict and use warnings, I think those are related to stopping you doing shortcuts and...
Yes, you have to declare variables. Strict means declare all variables before you use them. Perl's very, very easygoing about these things. I hate that personally. I'd much sooner declare everything, be rigorous about it. And the warnings just enables the warning level. That's part of the standard template that I just used to create Perl scripts. That's what
I suspected that as I've seen it appear on more than one occasion. I'm surprised you don't use a dumper as well, or is your Perl foo way beyond the user?
Well, I don't want to load modules into a script that I'm not going to use. If I was going to use it, yes, but I mean, I could add it as part of the template and comment it out, but I don't really want the script to be loading stuff that it doesn't need.
Okay.
If I plan to use it for debugging, then yes, but not otherwise.
Now, we need to explain to people here, there's a whole go of additional modules that you can load into Perl to basically do everything you want. And there's a site out there called cPAN, which contains all these modules. So rather than reinventing the wheel, I think the general rule of thumb is you should not reinvent the wheel. You should go out to cPAN and get your stuff, bring it in, and reuse that. Did I Definitely. Pick that up right?
You did indeed, yes, yes. It's one of the great strengths of Perl. There is a huge archive of libraries, modules, that you can include in a script.
Yeah, and I would be extremely surprised if you couldn't find anything that you need already done out there.
Yes,
so
yes.
That's where you declare them at the beginning of your script. So we're at line 34, so you're going to say my dollar duration. And the dollar duration, the dollar stands for scalar.
Scalar variable, yes.
Which is like yes. Larry Wall picked the dollar because it looked like an S, so you would know it was a scalar. Did you know that?
Yes.
And he picked an at for an array because it looks like an A sign for array. And he picked a percent for a hash because it looks a bit like a H.
I didn't know all of those. No. There that's good.
That's usually as far as I get into Perl books, because there's also another excellent cartoon, you know, like that I've seen for webcomic, where it goes, here are two ducks, add one duck is three ducks. And then, using the same logic, logarithmic 4n over x, y, z, you know, really complicated algorithm. And the note underneath is, this is how most computer books are written. The really simple first two paragraphs, and then the dumps dives really deeply in, which is why Sam's Teach Yourself Perl is actually quite good. But anyway, I digress. I should edit that part out, but I'm not going to.
It's true. What you said is true, though. Okay.
So you declare some other stuff. My sign, which is the plus or minus, I guess you're going to do that. But now, I want to go into, you're declaring an array here of labels.
Yep.
And you're using this QW thing, which I have not used ever before, believe it or not. Seen it used, but so years, months, days, hours, minutes, seconds. And correct me if I'm wrong, what the QW does is it puts quotes, comma, quotes, comma, quotes, comma, quotes, comma. Why have I not used that before? Am I completely thick?
it's a wonderful shortcut. It's definitely something to be used. I'd recommend you do so.
And but you see, I think what happens with me is I start off coding without any, just rambling, you know, pick a piece of code here, hack it there. Oh, I need another variable. I'll put it up, quotes, comma, quotes now. And then I need another one. I'll pick it and I'll just put it up. You know, it starts off as being one and then it expands.
I know. What you see with my coding is I'm incredibly finicky and bit of a control freak when it comes to this sort of stuff, so I have to keep going over it and tidying it up and making it prettier. So you've seen the result of much prettification here.
Oh, very good.
It's worth it, though, because when you come back and look at it later on, it's clearer and cleaner, and then you can probably hack lumps out of it and stick it in another script easily, and there you are. You've got the result of your previous tidying already into another.
So. Yep. And actually, this is specifically really why I wanted to do this show. It's not about necessarily about Perl. It's about making Perl, essentially this is a beautiful script. I spent quite a lot of the last few weeks looking at not beautiful scripts because I've written them myself. And then Dave sent this thing over to me and I nearly was I was very impressed. I'm very happy to get it because it answered my question, but I was actually nearly crying because how little time it took you to write it and how pretty and useful it was at the end.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Anyway, we'll move on. So what you're doing is you're defining the labels and you're defining the fields, which is going to be interesting in a minute. And something new I see in this version is you're defining a hash of ISO duration.
It's not for any great, nothing very important. It's merely me messing around and showing how it might be nice to stick all this into a hash with labels on it. And if you look a bit later on, there's an example of how it's done. So it was there just, I was going to write some notes around this and say, here's how you do this if you ever need to do it.
I prefer using hashes over. Right, well, we'll come to this. I just need to remember to talk about this. Okay, so then we go down line 30, skipping over the comments, which are really useful. We've got 35 and 36. Now, you're going to do two regular expressions here. And we're specifically, even though the reason for this script is that I was having trouble with this, what I consider a fairly complex regular expression. I don't know if you'd agree or not.
It's moderately so, yeah.
Kicking Wiley's down.
Well, you know, if you delve into regular expressions, you'll find some that will just completely blow your head off.
Yes, you will.
So this is once you get to it, it's actually not that hard to do. Anyway.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. The first one you're checking for an integer, which is slash d plus. So that is any digit with zero or more.
One or more.
There has to be one or more.
That slash D means digit, and the plus that follows it means one or more.
Okay, hold on to that thought now, because later on, I need to check for a digit with the years in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and you're looking for a fraction, which you define as any square bracket 0-9 square bracket, which means any number 0 to 9. Why not use the slash D then there?
No particular reason, actually. No particular reason why not. I'm not. I think that. I know what it was. I was actually that was me just being a bit silly there, because I was actually going to include the decimal point within the square brackets. So 0-9 full stop would mean it's quite happy to accept the digits 0-9 and a full stop. And then I thought, oh no, actually that's not very good, because we need there to be only one decimal point, whereas that would have allowed any number of them. So I changed it, but I didn't. Yeah, that should be tidy. That's Mr. A tidying pass.
Dear,
one is only human, of course. So.
Okay, so you guys, what we have now on mine, because I've corrected it, people with my men's pearl foo, is /d plus, so meaning one or more digits, and then we have parentheses, open parentheses, question mark, colon, forward, escape, so like backslash, period or full stop, backslash d plus, close parentheses, question mark. Okay, digits plus, and then in the in between the two brackets is take that, store that as a variable later, yes? In between the parentheses, use the that as a variable.
No. Here's the issue here. When you put parentheses around a regular expression or a part of a regular expression, what that means is you want to capture the stuff that matches that bit of the regular expression.
Yes.
So something when the expression is fired up will grab a piece of the text that's fed to it. But there are times when you want to enclose things and then apply some function to them. And you don't want your brackets to be capturing, as they're called. Okay. This expression, open parenthesis, question mark, colon, followed by stuff and the close parenthesis, means I want you to bracket these so that they're a unit, but not use the capturing process. Yeah? Am I making sense?
Right. Yes.
And the reason for that is because in this particular expression, we want to say we're looking for a digit, one or more digits, followed by a full stop, followed by one or more digits, or just a straight digit. I mean, the decimal here could either be something with a decimal point and some following digits or not. So we want to put the non-capturing parentheses around the dot other digits, and the question mark after it means that bit's optional. So it applies to that whole bracketed expression.
Right. So the reason you put it in brackets in the first place, right, assuming that is removing this capturing thing, which was what I was referring to, putting it into a variable. So it says then the whole thing is slash d plus, so meaning one digit plus, so that would be the before the fraction part. Mm-hmm. And then then it just says these three characters, open bracket, question mark, colon, is just to say this is, evaluate this as one unit.
Yes, exactly.
And then this escape dot means don't use the dot as a this or more characters,
but use it as
a regular dot, followed by a slash d, which is a digit, where there has to be one. Close the bracket, meaning that evaluation. So what you're saying in there is a dot with one or more digits would be required if I didn't have the final question mark at the end.
Yes. Okay. It allows that to be optional.
Now, people driving along on their lawnmowers, perhaps brain has just blown up because of this. We strongly advise that you follow along with this. In fact, we should put this in the as the title of this show.
Yes. Well, see, now what I've done in the show notes that I've started drafting, right?
Yeah.
Well, two things to say here. Number one is the script itself is available for download. It's up on Gitorious, and the URL of it is in the show notes, right? So you can grab your own copy of it, or you can sit and gaze at it while you're listening to the show if you want to follow this through. The other thing I've done is in the show notes, I've actually started on a little tutorial about how to knit a regular expression. What I do to knit a regular expression anyway. So I'm trying to sort of explain step by step how I arrived at the expression that's going to follow. How did I do it? Well, the simple way to approach this sort of stuff, I always find, is don't get too bogged down in the detail, right? We've got a thing here where you've got to have a P starting the expression. Then it's followed by one or more digits and a Y. But maybe not. You don't have to put that in. If all you want to do is express the thing in days, then you can put P number D, and that will express the number of days. You can omit that bit entirely and just put the T portion and then number of hours or minutes or seconds. So all of these things are optional. And as you start to think of all the possible ways of expressing that, your brain explodes.
Yes, it does actually.
So the way I did it was simply to write a simple regular expression that says, taking an example of one of these duration things with all of the fields filled in, how would you write an expression to match it? So my expression just went P some numbers Y, P some number followed by some numbers M, etc. Yeah, it's hard to express in words, which is why I've tried to write some notes about it. And then I went over that and thought, okay, well, from there I need to capture bits of it, because as it was, it wasn't being captured. So put some brackets around the bits that weren't captured. And then some of these bits are optional. So put some of these special non-capturing brackets around that lot and put a question mark at the end to make them optional. And so on and so forth. So gradually it was built up layer by layer. Are you with me?
I am completely with you. So say we were to do this with something simpler like an email address. You would, first of all, start with writing joe@example.com.
Mm-hmm.
Try and capture that, and then...
Well, you might approach
well,
that
and say,
well, that's
an easier one because...
It's a string of letters followed by an at, followed by a string of letters. But hang on, no, it's more than letters, so stick some numbers in there as well in the brackets that you're using to match it, say. And then you think, oh, no, hang on, you can also have hyphens in there, so bung them in as well. Oh, you can also have dots in there, put them in. Can you have a plus? Is that valid or not? Yes, it is valid by some people's definitions of mail addresses.
Epicanus.
So put that in, and so on. But what was that?
Epicanus uses that a lot.
Yes. It's valid. It's valid, but a lot of mail servers don't accept it. It used to be a standard. I used to use it a lot because it's a great way of putting variants on your addresses. So if you sign up to a mailing list, you put plus something or other on the end of your normal address, and then you know it's come from the mailing list, and you can filter it easily on the basis of that. But some mail service, Microsoft particularly, Exchange, does not like it. I think you have to do stuff to switch it on.
Okay, that's a by the by anyway.
What you're saying
is we take the complicated thing, we break it down, start with something,
well,
and then work up, build your way up.
Let me express it a different way. When I was learning to write programs, and I was actually teaching, I was running an evening class, adult education evening class many years ago in Pascal, and there was a book that had come out at that time written by a couple of guys at Glasgow University Computer Science Department, and they were using the technique of stepwise refinement. So you start with your specification, possibly on a bit of paper, in a simple possible form. You know, program, read some data, do some stuff with it, write an answer. That's your program. Then you look at each piece of it and you say, well, what does that actually mean? And you then expand it into maybe now you can actually start writing some statements in your language. And then you take each non-expanded piece of that and refine that. So you're going through it step by step, refining it layer by layer. It's not a well-regarded methodology these days, but I think it should be personally, because it's the method I use for
developing stuff. It's also the method
stuff.
I use, but
yeah,
I end up
yeah.
with crap code and you end up with beautiful code. I guess I'm missing a step somewhere along the line.
Well, maybe I polish more, I don't know. Yeah.
That could be it. All right, let's continue on with so you've defined two variables, which are actually how to do a regular expression on an integer and on a fraction.
I should say, hold on before you move on.
Yep.
That these things are enclosed in QR brackets. QR means this is another thing like QW, but it means this is a regular expression. And what it does is it causes the Perl interpreter to compile the regular expression at that point in time. So you can then go and bandy this thing around and use it in other contexts. We could get into what's a compiled regular expression and what's not, but I'm not even sure I could answer that very well at the moment. But let's leave it as a marker that's quite a powerful feature of Perl, and that's why I've used it there.
Okay, cool. Of course, that fact completely went over my head.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So now you have the real regular expression where you're bringing in all of these together, subparts of regular expressions, and you're wrapping this in a QR, which obviously is a compiled regular expression.
Well, again, you might wonder, why the hell did I put it there? Because the regular expression is to be used in an if statement, because we're going to check things against, you know, does it match this regular expression or not? Well, the reason is because if you put it in the if expression, it looks absolutely nightmarish, I think. I really like to generate these things as a compiled statement somewhere else where I can, you know, fiddle about with it and make it look pretty and then can use it later on in the, and possibly more than once elsewhere in the script.
Yes, yeah. It does actually look, and actually that explains one of the questions, because you have, we'll get to it later on, how you're using it, how you were able to avoid using it. Okay, cool. No, that explains that. Okay, now within this one you have open bracket, question mark, X, close bracket. What's that?
Perl regular expressions have the capability of lots of extra gubbins, which is not available in many other regular expression environments, which you can put within the expression. So they're sort of pragmas and extensions and so forth. Simpler regular expressions, you can simply put, normally you put slashes around your regular expression. So slash, some expression slash, can be followed by a modifier. So there are a lot of modifiers. One of them is I, which means all of that regular expression don't care about the case of anything you match in it. The one that I'm using is X, which means the regular expression can be formatted with spaces in it, comments in it, laid out with new lines in it, and generally made to look prettier. You can either stick that at the end after the close curly bracket, or you can stick it at the front in this format using the fancier version.
I love this because I think this regular expression would actually give somebody a heart attack if they looked at it.
If it was all on one line,
yes,
you would have a hell of a job to work out where one sub expression began and the next ended and so forth.
So for those not following along reading the script, there's 11 lines of this regular expression, which includes variables that we have already defined previously, which we have discussed before. And each of those lines are kind of filled out in a nice column. So tabbed in, you have the regular expression, tab, the comment, and exactly what each part of the regular expression does. So it's really, really tidy, really, really easy to read, and I wish more people would do this. So that's line 54. Line 55 is charret, open bracket, open square bracket, plus minus, close square bracket, question mark, close bracket. Now, let me assume a string begins with the optional sign. So the charret is a start of line, correct?
Yep.
And I think that's the correct word for like the Chinese hat type symbol. And then square brackets are a plus and minus symbol followed by a question mark. And the question mark means it may be there or not.
One or zero.
One or zero, yeah. Okay,
or fine. Preceding expression, yeah.
Gotcha. And you're enclosing that in a regular bracket and nothing special about those.
Those are capturing brackets.
Those are capturing. So that means now that %1, it is %1, isn't it? Where do these go? This is captured, and it must be a magic variable because I'm not assigning a variable name to it.
Ooh, this Perl's very flexible. There's an aphorism that goes with Perl. Is it TWMI? I can't remember what it is. There's more than one way to do it, whatever the initial letters are of that. Tim Widdy or something, people pronounce it. There's always multiple ways of achieving a thing in Perl. This This particular one is well, when you're capturing elements in a regular expression, yes, you're quite right, they go somewhere. They can go into what you could effectively call magical variables that are sort of behind the scenes that you can access after you've applied the regular expression to the string that you're working with. But you can also make it return a list of items, which you then assign to a list of variables or to an array. A bit later on, the if statement uses this. It uses the assign to list type of.
And this is kind of what confused me earlier on, because I was using the %1, %2, %3, which isn't really handy if you need to add in another line that you missed, because then you need to change the numbers.
Yes, yes, yes. You're better not to do that if you can help it.
So assign directly to variable names that you know are an array.
Yes, okay. Yes, that's by far the best way of doing it.
I'm with you, not again. All right, so the next line is an easy one. It's got the letter P. Now, I don't know if that P should be... I've always seen it as an uppercase P, but I would need to read the spec to see whether it would be a
yes, lowercase. I don't know. I assumed all these letters were uppercase.
And okay. If they weren't, you would put it in, you would not put it in a bracket because you don't want to capture it. You just follow it with an I?
Or surround it with an I?
How would I make that case insensitive?
You can do that thing where you put brackets around it with a question mark and an I. I think not followed by anything. I can't remember now what follows the modifier. Yeah, or you could simply modify the whole string, because you probably don't care about, if you don't care about the case of that, you probably don't care about the case of anything else. So yeah. you'd probably ignore case and the whole string, the whole regular expression.
Yeah, true enough. Okay, cool. But this is another example of let me check the spec. Do it step by step is what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then we go on to the next line, which 5 lines are very similar, so don't get worried, folks. The open parentheses colon, question mark colon. What did we say that was? Non-capturing?
This is an enclosure, but a non-capturing enclosure, non-capturing parentheses.
Okay. Then we have, which follows on two parentheses, surrounding the int, which was the slash d plus from before, which we compiled into a regular expression.
Yep.
So what you're saying there, and then followed by the letter y, close parentheses, close question mark. So the non-capturing bit is the y, and the capturing bit is the int for you.
Yes, yes.
And the exact same line was repeated for month, days, hours, and minutes. And in there we have...
One thing you've missed, though, you assumed that the closing, the last question mark was somehow balancing the first one. Well, it isn't, I'm afraid.
It's to make it optional.
It makes the whole of that expression from the first parenthesis to the last optional, because your duration might omit the year spec completely.
Absolutely, yes, yes, correct. So a non-capturing parentheses is just terminated with a regular parentheses without anything.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Perfect.
We'll
with it.
Yep.
Now you're doing a funky one here for the time, because you're encasing the whole time thing in a non-capturing parentheses as well.
Yes, with an optional
question mark after.
Because
I need to remember
to
put that in.
Yes.
The whole time
could
be optional.
The whole time thing might not exist.
And
if it does, then there must be a T to start it.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, I get that. And then the fraction is the fraction regular expression is just before the seconds, and that is more to do with the specification than anything else. Okay, perfect. Now, halfway through the scripts, folks, hope we haven't put all those truck drivers to sleep. Wake up! Okay, now we're at line 70 if you're following along. Riveting news here on HPR. And we're 2 minutes overdue for the community news to start, but sure, we'll plumb on ahead. Nobody's online.
Okay.
Then we have duration equals shift, right? Now, in Ireland, shift means something completely different.
I won't ask.
It's anything from a peck on the cheek to a snog.
All right. Okay. There you go.
There you go. That's the best definition I heard from a good friend of mine. So this is obviously taking it from where now?
The argument string.
Yep.
Where
did the arguments... We haven't defined arguments. Does this magically appear out of nowhere?
Well, when the script runs, as with anything that you run from the command line in the Linux Unix system, you can follow your invocation with any number of arguments, which are parsed by the shell and fed to the script or the program or whatever it is. So this is the Perl's mechanism for saying, get me the first one of these things. They're presented as an array to the script.
And this is where there's more than one thing to do it, because you've got that $arg, a capital A or G,
mm-hmm.
capital,
mm-hmm. Yep.
which
yep.
I have been using because I'm an idiot, apparently.
Well, it's
another way to do it.
There's another way to, there's many ways of doing things in Perl. This is the simple to look at, but complex to explain method of doing it. But yes, it's shift when, in this context, the top level of the script, shift means get the arguments from the command line.
And Perl is very, very much that the context, it's very much dependent on the context.
Yes.
Because if
yes.
we were doing a loop through an array, for instance, the shift then would refer to the array as opposed to arguments, correct?
It can do, yes. And it can also mean different things in a subroutine.
Yes. I picked the ARG dollar because then it was very clear to me where
yes,
it was coming from.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't argue with you because to me that's a sort of shorthand. And it's very meaningful to me because I've done this so many times. But when I was an early Perl programmer, I wouldn't have done that probably. I just thought, I'm going to be puzzled by what the hell that means when it comes to rereading it.
What would concern me more is that if I put it in the wrong place, then I suddenly am shifting arguments from the mother program as opposed to the loop that I'm going through or the loop I then pick up and put it into a subroutine because I want to make it clearer, and then suddenly shift the context of shift changes.
Well, it's actually quite logical. Shift at the top level means shift from the argument array to the program. Shift in a subroutine means shift from the argument array given to the subroutine. Shift with an argument itself, an array argument itself, means shift off this array.
So okay.
It's pretty logical.
Yes, Steve.
To me, anyway.
Okay, folks, as a reminder here that you can send in your own programs and talk about them for hours if you wish as well. Anyway, you were going to say?
I was merely going to say that this while loop is there so that you can feed the script a whole bunch of these expressions and parse them all rather than fire it up multiple times with one at a time.
I did not know this.
That was why.
Yes, it would have been handier. This is actually a very, very clean and elegant way of getting parameters through, I must say. Yes, money penny.
And
how do you?
Yes. The other thing is, there's a along with it, there's a file of example expressions. So all you need to do is to put a cat statement on the command line with as a command, so that that's the contents of that file are simply offered as a command line to the script when it runs. So it's a pretty common bash convention.
Yes, and if you want more information on the cat command, you should go back to Dan Washko's Linux in the Shell series here in HBR.
Yeah, it was good
cat.
That. I enjoyed that.
Okay, print duration. Nothing special here. The variable duration, which will print whatever the first parameter in this case, because we're running through it the first time. Then we skip over, and then we get to the good meat and potatoes. If open brackets space open bracket dollar sign comma ampersand fields close bracket equals open bracket duration space equals tilde dollar or e for regular expression close bracket open squiggly bracket for I don't know what that is. Open squiggly bracket for the if statement. Yeah. Now, question number one here is the sign. How do I know that if the sign is optional, you said?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So will it not then? Okay, well, I want to explain to people, I want to ask you, this is my assumption of starting over on the right here, you have duration equals tilde, regular expression. And the equals tilde is the format saying this is a regular expression. So all that junk, perform it on the variable duration, which is the first argument because we've just shifted it in. Correct or not?
That's right. It's applying the regular expression to the contents of duration.
Okay, and those two parentheses following those explodes that out to being It'd be quote, one, quote, comma. Say we had the year, 1 year, 1 month, 1 day, T, 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 second. It would be quoted one, comma, one, comma, one, comma, one, comma, one. And that would pipe back into the other side of the equal sign, correct or not?
Yes, yes, essentially correct, yeah. It's that expression, the regular expression application there is operating in what Perl calls list context. The fact it's in a bracket means I'm a list. Give me an answer back as a list. So it will come back as a list. Forget the commas because a list is a sort of entity of items in a row, if you like,
an array.
A stack or something.
Would it be an array?
An array, yes. Effectively, it's an array, yes, yes. And the equals that precedes that, so that effectively you've got two list expressions. You've got a bracketed thing with the regular expression stuff in it, and you've got a bracketed thing before that with variables in it. So it says on the right-hand side, generate a list, and on the left-hand side, stuff the results of that list generation into these variables.
Okay.
So the first item from the list goes into sign, and anything left goes into at fields, which is the array. So you're filling a whole set of things together. And why did I split them?
For people who are... No, I just want to make an explanation here for people who are following along. I don't know why you get this far if you're not into programming. Don't know why you get this far if you are into programming. But anyway, hey, it's our show. We can do what we want. Wow, live on the edge. A array would be a bit like a chest of drawers, I imagine. So, you know, you put a value into one chest of drawers, and then underneath there's another one, and underneath there's another one, and underneath there's another one. Just that's how I liked to think of it.
It's a perfectly fine concept, yes.
Okay,
or a stack of pigeonholes, or however you like to say
stack of pigeonholes, not really unless it's a two-dimensional array, correct?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, picked up something. Don't know what it was, but I picked it up. It's on the underside of my shoe. Okay, let's now, Dave, have I found a bug in your program? Because you have, on the one hand, you're going to do all this funky stuff, so you're going to get all these values, multiple values, and then you're going to put them onto the other side, and the first one you're going to assume is sign.
Yep.
And I just said it as I said it out loud, I just realized that even if these things are optional, it still returns an empty position.
It returns beautiful. The don't know value in Perl, which is called undefined.
So therefore, this chest of drawers is already defined, the size of it is already defined by the regular expression, by the number of capturing elements.
Correct.
In the regular expression.
Yes.
It almost sounds like I know what I'm doing. And you know, for a moment there, I have. But the beauty of this is I've recorded it, and I can prove to myself later on I did understand at the time. All right. So sign, you just want to put in there into a separate one itself rather than in fields.
Yes, because it's easier. It's not a field of a date. It's a separate entity, I thought.
Okay, and now you're doing a really cool Perl thing, which I must say I did a little happy dance. I knew about it, but I did a happy dance when it finally hit home. And it is sign, so the variable sign is equal to the plus character, unless sign.
Yep.
Which means if the sign isn't filled in or is empty or undefined, then you make it plus by default.
Yep, that's right.
It is beautiful.
So it defaults to plus.
Yeah. And that this again, says. this formatting of unless something do something or die unless blah is kind of the opposite of the if. It's another example of this Perl do it many different ways thing.
And it's also a linguist's view of the world, I always think, because you know in English you say if and you also say unless, so it makes sense that the programming language would do that as well.
Yeah, but then I have the. I struggle them with my Perl, you know, pick a way of doing it and be consistent with consistency of coding. Because sometimes I will do, you know, for the same loop, I will do it with an if statement, and otherwise, and sometimes I'll do it with an unless statement. What I'm tending to do now myself is I use an unless if it's a very simple one-liner, and I use an if there's going to be multiple options in it.
Well, I tend to use the rule that if it makes sense, if it's meaningful, then use the unless. You know, if you say unless some test, then do something. Sometimes that's more meaningful than if not some test, then do something. It depends. It depends on the context, I think. But the fact you've got both optional ways of achieving it is one of the things I like about Perl.
Yeah, but okay. So we're checking. Essentially, what we're doing is checking here if a variable is defined or not. And
yes.
Quite often, when I'm looking at data, I'm checking to see whether it's defined or not. If it's defined, I want to do something. If it's not defined, I also want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
With that unless thing, you can't go into four different lines of things. It's one single line.
You can. It's just you can use it instead of an if. It's just that your if test is reversed.
You put it at the front.
Yeah. So you can say unless brackets dollar x equals one and that's the same. So if it's not,
yeah, but
it's not one.
If I want to set x equals to one, I want to print out something, I want to run another variable or another subroutine, and I want to do something else, which you can do with an if statement because you enclose it in a curly bracket.
Yes, same with unless.
Oh, but I haven't seen people do that.
Well, I suppose a lot of people don't like it. I personally find that quite fun. But it depends on the context. It depends. You would only use it, I think, if it was appropriate. You know, if you've got a variable that you're using as a Boolean flag, where you know, something like unless light is on, then put the light on or something. And if it reads well in a sort of garbled English form, then sometimes that's more meaningful, I believe.
Okay, yeah, but the only thing that I fear is that you, as you're reading it, if it goes to multiple sentences, and then the unless is at the end, you're assuming that it's doing all these things, when in actual fact, oh, yeah, sorry about that. This is a negative statement.
Oh, yeah, it's true, yes. Yeah. The traps of Booleans and the nots and the ands and the ors and stuff are still there, regardless.
Yeah, but they're at the end.
You have to tread carefully.
Yeah, you would have a bracket of code, and it's only at the end you find out that it's not an if statement, it's an unless statement. Because
yes.
On the other side, okay, fine, we've spent enough time. Now, the
use
next,
with caution.
And this is the next line, and correct me if I'm wrong here. You're saying fields equals a whole go of stuff which we'll talk about later than fields. The whole stuff which we'll talk about later is the map command, which is between curly braces. And then in between that we have two other brackets, which has got the words defined, open brackets, dollar underscore, close brackets, question mark, dollar underscore, colon, zero, close brackets. Yeah. So the full thing is the array fields is equal to the mapping of fields, where in you're doing a check on each of the fields to see if they're defined, and if not, you're putting them to zero, correct?
Yes, it's forcing everything that's undefined to be zero, so that you don't, because you actually want to display these things, and displaying undefined values causes problems.
Yeah, and it's very, very, it's a lot clearer, yes. But why not use the implicit statement? You have it if, like we had before, if sign fields, if just the variable name, then that just checks to see if the variable exists or not. Why use defined?
Just a convention, really.
Because defined is being deprecated. Did you know that?
I don't know whether it is.
Because that would then read... the way, the dollar underscore is this magic notepad that people are allowed to use, a kind of chalkboard, temporary chalkboard, where you can throw a variable without... And of course, this is all in context as well. Now, what does the map command do, pray?
The map command applies an expression to each element of an array. So it's a type of loop. You could write this same thing by simply going through a loop which looped through every element of the array. Said is it defined? Yes, then okay, carry on. Otherwise, replace it with zero. You'd write it that way.
Okay.
Map's just a quicker and more convenient way of doing it.
Yeah, which is why I've avoided it like the plague as well.
It's nice once you get the hang of it.
As maybe. And you're also using this other short form of if-then statement. So
yes.
You're doing something,
yes.
Question mark.
That's a conditional expression, I think, is defined as.
Okay, thanks. Conditional expression. So you've got this before the question mark, which is the if Tom is
test.
Equal to X.
Yes, that's the test. There's
the test yes.
Followed by a question mark. And then you've got the true branch and then the false branch.
So
separated by a colon.
The test is if it's defined.
Yes.
And then the question mark is, if it's true, then it's $_. So it is what it is if it is.
Return, yes.
Yeah.
So
and otherwise, is put it to zero.
The result of each iteration through the map loop, implicit loop, returns values which are then strung together and put into the fields thing on the left-hand side of the assignment.
Which is what I want to talk to you about in a minute. But this, again... The whole purpose of this show is kind of to explain to me why you're picking this form of code in this point. Because I always try to avoid this one. I prefer to go if, then, this, then, equals.
Yes.
And I tend
yes.
to do that if it's a short one, I'll put it in on a single line. But it makes for ugly code.
It's a matter of taste, really, I think. The first language I learned was Algol 60, to give you some idea of how old I am, probably, which you couldn't do anything other than build a loop with a test inside it. That was a fine convention. You could easily bring that sort of logic to Perl and do it in a case like this. But one of the nice features and shortcuts of Perl is this things like map and so forth. And so I've just developed the personal convention of using them wherever it's appropriate. Now that I feel confident enough to do so, I would use them. I think I wouldn't advise anybody to force themselves to do this if they didn't feel happy with it.
No, I understand. But again, what I was trying to do in my own silly way was be consistent in the code and not mix it up. But that results in very, very ugly code, whereas you've got very pretty-looking code, but you're mixing these conventions, doing exactly what I was trying to avoid doing, but when you do it, it makes for tidy code.
It's also using the power of Perl. I mean, so long as you understand what it's doing, then you know that this is one of the powerful features. There'll be similar things in other languages too. I know Python's quite good at doing this type of thing where you take a list and zap through it, doing a particular thing to stuff within it. So you know it's a feature. And it's a desirable feature.
Now, this is... I want to go back to a question that has been on my mind for some time. If we go back to our chest of drawers, so you have one drawer stacked on top of the other. What essentially you're doing here is you're going to take the value of the years that I give in the argument, so 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and you're going to put the first one in the top drawer, which will be called 0.
Yes.
The second one into the second drawer, which we call 1, and the whole we write down. And that array is called fields. So we on the chest of drawers, we're writing in chalk fields, @fields. And then shelf 0, shelf 1, shelf 2, 3, the whole way down the line. Now you're rolling in another chest of drawers, and you're calling that fields. No.
It's the same one.
Sorry.
It's the same one. It's doing a juggling act here. It's grabbing things out of the array and doing stuff to them and poking them back into the same array.
Labels. You have labels. Sorry, labels. Mm-hmm. Labels. Mm-hmm. Labels up at the top. So you have an array. So the fields one, sorry, is, I'm not talking about the fields one. I'm talking what you were doing there to use our drawer analogy was you were using the map command to go through each of the drawers, check to see if there's something in there. If there isn't, put in a 0. And if there is, just go to the next one. So essentially that's what you're doing. All right. But now with this labels thing that you're doing, you're pulling in another chest of drawers and you're calling that @labels. And then in the first drawer, which is drawer zero, you're putting in the word years. The second drawer, which is drawer one, you're putting in months and so forth, days, hours, minutes, seconds. And then you're using, by virtue of the fact that you're going to display these, print them off in a loop, and you're going to go from zero to the end of the drawers. So you're going to open the, pull out both drawers at the same time. You're going to look in the first one and go one, pull out the second drawer and go year. You're going to close those two, go to the next two, pull them out, one. Okay, so that's kind of what's happening, yeah?
You're talking here about the
using the two arrays and using the fact that they're the same size.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then doing a loop from one to the maximum and then using the second array as labels. Okay, why not use a hash?
Well, you're talking about this thing called ISO duration. I don't think you said that, did you?
Well, no, I'm more referring to the other program, the previous version of this, which didn't have the ISO duration thing.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the for loop.
We're going down to the for loop at line 97, and we're skipping conveniently over the hash way of doing it, which, to be honest, I'm more comfortable with, because the idea of maintaining two arrays in order, because if you're doing some sorting on the first one, your second one goes completely haywire. So now, if you had 4 years before, it's now 3 months. It's 4 months, you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, let me let me try and pull that all together. In the latest version of the script, I'm using a hash merely as an example of how you could use a hash as a way of storing together both the labels, things like years, months, etc., along with the value. So you end up with a structure that contains labels and values. So that's quite a convenient way of doing things. However, the problem with using that is that when you come to display its contents, you probably want to display them in the order of years, months, days, hours, minutes, seconds. The way that hashes are put together, the labels are not in any particular order. They're in completely arbitrary order. So if you simply cycle through the labels, you have no easy way of ensuring that they'll come out in the right order.
Absolutely. So it could come out as, in our case, 1 week, 1 year, 1 month, mm-hmm. whatever. But that doesn't change the structure of the data, mind you.
No, the relationship of the label to the value. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, before we go any further, using our analogy of what a hash is before, if we take a chest of drawers and we put some and we get a marker and we write another chest of drawers, not the other two that we have on one side of the corner. On the other side of the room, we've got a chest of drawers that's got all the shelves in it, and we call that, what are we calling it? ISO duration, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then on the front of each of the drawers, we're writing, on the first one, we're writing years, and then the second one, we're writing the word months, days, hours, minutes.
Yep.
So
yep.
Using that, you can go to that hash, which is what's called in C, called a structured something or other, can't remember. So you can refer to specifically that hash and that name value. So you can go that hash hours and go directly to that drawer without having to cycle through to that hash.
It's called an associative array.
That's the word. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so I use these all the time because I find them far cleaner to work with than
whereas the thing arrays. You were saying before is that I've got two arrays, one of which has got labels and the other one's got fields in, and the only reason that they're useful is that they're both positioned the same. It's like having two chests of drawers side by side with the labels in one and the values in the other. But it's only the fact that they correspond one with the other that you've got useful knowledge there. Yes.
Yeah, okay. But the funky thing about hashes is they're multi-dimensional. You can make them any structure you like. So you can have a drawer that has got that's called 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 down the long, and then inside of that you can have a shoebox that's got the word years on it, and inside of that you have your value. And then you can sort through 0 to the end, ignoring what the labels are, and then get at the values if you wanted.
Yep.
But I don't do that either, because usually I know exactly what field I want to refer to.
Yes. You can make some pretty hairy structures within Perl. But yes, that's for another day, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it won't be for me.
All right.
Because trying to get them working with multidimensional arrays and references to hash of hashes it gets very hairy very quickly. But one thing I didn't know that you could do was just dump an array of hashes like that using this one-liner.
Well, that's why I did it. It's referred to as zipping together two arrays into a hash.
And I think
I put it there just as a demo, really.
Do you know what would be really useful, if you wouldn't mind, and you've done it for some of your code, is that you're using the Perl terminology for what you're doing, because I find it very difficult in Perl to figure out what it is the terminology is that they're using to describe a thing. And by the time I figured out what the terminology is for the thing that I'm trying to find out, I figured it out anyway because I've read so much stuff.
Mm.
Then I figure out what the terminology is.
Yes. Yes. Well, we probably need some show notes to go along with this that maybe explain some of this stuff, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So now you've assigned the sign to a single one, and you've assigned ISO duration to labels and fields. Oh, that's really cool. Is there any particular reason, do you think, why hashes are just in some random order and not ordered? I think it was more memory efficient or something from what I could read.
Yes, I think so. Because it is a hash table, which is the result of doing some rather funky mathematical analyses on the contents. The whole concept of associative arrays work that way. You can't be sure of the way in which things come out. And I think Perl's gone even further with this and has ensured that the order of labels within a hash are always randomized between invocations of a script, because it makes the script less predictable if you're trying to hack it from outside.
Ooh,
but
wow.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So yes.
Okay.
So
moving
do
on.
You wanna, yep, go on.
Now then we have the printf command which is stolen directly from C, if I'm not mistaken.
Indeed, yes.
And then we would have %-7s colon space %6s new line quote comma double quote sorry double quote comma double quote sign double quote comma dollar sign quotation. Tell me what that is.
That prints out in a formatted way in seven columns the string sign. The -7 means left justify it, otherwise it would be right justified within the seven columns. And then that's followed by a six column string, which is right justified. So you would see
a moment of music.
Some echo there.
Yeah, come on ahead.
Right, we're good. So you will. The reason for that is because there's a further printf a bit later on that uses the same format for printing out the values that we've fished out with the duration. And so it just wants them
do
to line
loop,
up.
Then.
So the loop is simply stepping through the two arrays together using indexes into them, because they're indexed from 0 through to the maximum number of elements within them. And for each one, it prints out the contents of the label and the field. So you see year and a number, month and a number, and so forth.
Now, the first time you ever looked at something like this, it does look a bit like rocket science. So, but it's a standard C for loop, actually.
It is, yes. The only difference is that dollar hash fields business, which is Perl's way of specifying the length of the thing. But that's not even Perl's originally. That's what Bash does as well for representing length of things. So I think that comes from way back when. And the $i++ thing is a C thing, and it's all through Unix.
Okay, so the inside the for there's two parentheses enclosing three portions of the loop. You have the start, the check to see if it's the end, and the incrementation. The first part is my $i equals zero, and it took me ages to figure out why people picked $i.
Yeah, well, it's just, again, that's conventional. It's I and J and K tended to be the variables. Just, yeah. I think, because you see it in mathematical expressions very often, don't you?
Okay, yeah. So I equals zero, double semicolon means traditionally in Perl a new line. Is that actually a new line?
Semicolon is merely a statement end. So you can put multiple statements on a line. In this structure of the for loop, then it simply separates out the components of the iterator of the for loop. That's a C convention, I think.
Okay. And then the next thing is for I, which starts at zero, is less than or equal to the number of fields.
Uh-huh.
And then the first one it's not, and the second one it's not, and then it goes up until six. What is it, six or eight? And then it would be. And then if semicolon, and then I plus plus, meaning each time you do this thing, increment I, because if you don't, I will always remain at zero, and you'll be in this loop forever.
Yes. Indeed.
Which I've done on more than one occasion. So I wonder if when you press Control C, does the loop feel pain? Anyways, and then we have the printf statement using your %-7s trick. And then labels, square bracket, $i, square bracket, comma, fields, square bracket, $i, square bracket. And that, so each time your labels and your field chest or drawer, on one hand you're taking out zero from the labels drawer, and the other hand you're taking out fields from the fields chest or drawers.
Uh-huh.
Perfect. And then we close the for loop. We close the if statement. And the if statement, if you're still with us from 3 hours ago when you were driving through Cincinnati, that is the regular expression itself. So if the regular expression succeeded, we've done our thing, which is we've stored them and we've printed them all out.
Mm-hmm.
And the else would be just simply print invalid duration. And the final line, almost final line, is print a new line.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the end of the while loop.
That's right.
And otherwise, if you had put in one duration space, another duration space, another duration, it will continue happily on. And then
yes.
At the end, we have exit. And at the very end, you have one of your Vim marker things.
It's a mode line. It's an instruction to the editor to say, by the way, this is a Perl file, etc., etc. Tab stops, shift width, expand tabs, etc., etc. I won't go into that. Maybe that's for another podcast.
Why have you picked tabbing of 4 instead of 2? Like,
that's the shift width. That's what you get when you press the tab key. That's not the size of a tab. It's merely the what Vim does to move you, the number of columns it uses to skip when you press the tab key to line things up. And I've used that because, you know, it used to be the convention that you indented by 3, but I found 3 to be a nasty number.
Nasty number. I always pick 2.
Yeah, well, it's a matter of taste, really.
Okay, and one other question is, why do you put your start curly bracket on the same line as the statement and not directly underneath it?
Again, it's convention. It's style. It is the recommended style if you go to the style gurus of Perl. And if you feed this particular script through Perl Tidy, it will enforce that particular rule. But again, you know, it's convention. You can break away from it if you want to. The real rule is, if you're writing scripts and you're in a team all writing scripts, then use the same rules throughout. Otherwise, you get into all sorts of difficulties.
Perfect. Dave, that has explained things to me that have been bugging me for a while. And stuff you can't actually get in the book because it's conventions and stuff. Okay,
yeah.
With that, I think we should, we're 40 minutes over, so we're an hour and 40 minutes, oh my god. We better stop now for the community news, as ever. So, anything else you want to add?
No, that's me.
Alright, thank you very much, and remember folks, we're running fairly low on shows, so if you want, you can record something, upload it. If you're looking for the information, send an email to admin@hackerpublicradio.org or go on to Oddcast Planet on irc.freenode.net and ask anyone there, and then we'll give you the password for the FTP server. With that, tune in. Thank you very much again, Dave. Thanks very much for doing this, and thanks very much for the instructions on how to be a better Perl programmer. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Go Public Radio.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.